Late this morning, obviously I had my own technical errors. I left my laptop at home, and I was trying to get them to send it so I could do it on my phone, but my computer department couldn't get into my account. So, we'll pick up where we were last week. We will get through this. I'm going to skip over some stuff that I think won't be as relevant for the test as well, instead of covering as much as I normally would. But we will get through this. So where we last left off, we had just gone through Article 4, which was talking about the difference between supplemental and additional services and the type of things that you would do and add as an architect on the project site. The next section, Article 5, talks about the owner's responsibility. Obviously, we spent Article 2 and 3, which is the architectural responsibility, 2 being who's doing what, 3 being what are the basic services that are being provided, and then 4, what are the extra services you can have. Obviously, on a contract, both sides have some responsibilities, so the owner's responsibilities are important here. But much fewer. You know, one of the things you want to think about the owner is they are paying for everything. So while they have responsibilities, their job in the contract, remember we have consideration, their consideration is mostly money, and the architect is doing things. Same in the construction contract. The contractor is the one performing the services, and the owner is paying for it. But, of course, the owner still has to do some things to make sure that the work is done properly. So here, under 5.1, the owner shall provide information in a timely manner regarding requirements for and limitations on the project. You got to tell them what the project's about, and you got to do it on time. You know, if you're in a project and you're changing designs, you got to let them know, well, I'm going to add another bedroom, or I'm going to be modifying the kitchen, or I'm going to be putting a new wing in the hospital. Whatever I'm doing, you have to keep timely, because in projects, one of the things you want to remember throughout the course of your career, and it's such a cliche, but it is so critical in construction, time is money. When a project is delayed, so I would say 70% of all of my construction litigation projects are about delay and the cost of delay. Yes, there can be design issues. Yes, the wall can fall down. Those are the more, you know, basic that you think about it. They built it wrong and something happened. They designed it wrong and something happened. But the reality is where the big dollars come in the construction cases is the delay. Because if you have a contractor sitting around, it's not just the contractor, they're paying all the subs to sit around. And you have all this extra cost, and you can't open your factory in time to start making your candy. And you can't. So time is the most important thing. So the owner has an obligation here to give information in a timely manner. Now, this is also, in the beginning, the requirements and limitations of the project. This one's speaking about written program and the criteria, so this is more in the beginning. But that timely obligation goes throughout the life of the project. 5.2, the owner shall establish the owner's budget. Remember yesterday or last week when we were talking about Article 3, it said at the end of each schematic design development, construction document phase, at the end of each one, they said the architect will provide an estimate. Now we have the budget. The budget is like your cap. The estimate is if they can keep under the cap. So you have to give the budget to the architect. If you want them only to spend $1 million, you got to tell them, my budget's $1 million. You can't say, design whatever, and when they come back and they have something that's worth $2 or $3 million, say, oh, I thought it was only going to be $1 million. So you have an obligation, shall establish a budget. They need to update the budget if something happens. They shall update the budget. That may mean, hey, I can have more things or less things. I don't know what's going on. I have a project right now where they're doing, there's an entity that's kind of at the top of a building. It's an 8-story building, and this client has the entire 8th floor. And they want to do the medical facilities of the future. And they want it to be this modular space. So every 6 months, there's 5 different rooms that can rotate and change. And every 6 months, they're going to do something different. So like, here's an operating room for the future. Here's a waiting room for the future. And then they mix them up, and it's because their relationships with different, the company that is the owner, their relationship, they work with all these medical suppliers. So a medical supply company comes in and says, here's our operating tables. We want to display it. And they'll build out this room for 6 months. And then there'll be a new operating company that has different operating equipment, and they'll rotate this and that. So there's all these rotation things for the future. When I first started talking to the project manager for the owner, she's like, $1 million is my budget. And I was thinking, because this is going to be for an entire floor with 5 different suites of different things, I'm like, you're never going to get a bill for $1 million. But that was her budget. Well, as the architect has talked to her, the budget's gone up. We're now up to $3 million because of the cost. And so, under the contract, the owner shall update the budget. That's what she's been doing. She's had to go back to her board and get more money because she's realizing it's a lot more expensive than what she thought. But that's what happens. And it's not uncommon that your budget goes up. Maybe not by three times like in this one. That one probably because there was less of an understanding in the beginning of what they were going to need as opposed to the cost. But budgets change. You have to do that. And then if the owner significantly increases or decreases the budget for the cost of work, the owner shall notify the architect. You have to say, like, oh, I just, my business is doing terribly. I know I gave you a budget in the beginning and it's going to be this massive change. We have to do that. And then the architect may be able to use that to say, well, I have to change my fee or maybe I can't do the project. So that's what's called a cardinal change, but it's important. If it's a significant, you have to notify the architect of that when that comes up, not waiting to the end of some phase. Because the architect's going to spend a lot of money, and if the budget's gone way down, it's a waste of time. So, 5.3, the owner shall identify a representative authorized to act on the owner's behalf. That's just the person who's going to be the single point responsibility. When you get to a project, you want to have one person that speaks on behalf of the owner, that says, this is what we're going to do, and that person has the authority on behalf of the owner. It's common sense. But you don't want to have multiple voices on a project. One person. And that's going to happen. And the same thing like the architect has the one person. Their project manager, the contractor will have the project manager as well. 5.4. The owner shall furnish surveys to describe the physical characteristics, legal limitations, and utility locations for the site of the project, and a written legal description of the site. So you have property. You are the owner with property. Where's this building going to be built? You need to give a legal description. It's this thing called a meets and bounds description. It's a lot of legal gobbledygook. It has a lot of the way you write. If you ever have seen a legal description, especially in the state of Illinois, it's crazy to read. Like, I read them, I don't even know what they say. And it's about dimensions. It's about, sometimes they talk about markings and everything. But it's so important, because what you don't want to do is have your architect design and for some reason the building is going to go on the next door neighbor's property. So you have to have a legal description. Here's the four corners of my property. Where are we going to build it? You want to make sure the utilities. Sometimes it's just greenfield. Nothing's ever been there. There's never been any utilities. But nowadays, almost everything when they're built, it's something was there before. So you're going to have underground, you're going to have sewer, you're going to have gas, you're going to have water, you're going to have other things. And so you're going to need, as the owner, to provide to the architect where those utilities are, so when they're sinking their foundations, they're not going to hit a gas main. 20-plus years ago, I got a call from one of my partners, and they were doing some renovation work up by, like, State and Division and Clybourne, that area in there. They were doing some redoing some work there. And they hit a gas main as they were digging, because they had the utility locations. They actually just were wrong. And so during the construction, they hit a gas main. And because it was a backhoe that was going down, it caused a spark. And there was this flame shooting like 30 feet in the air. It was a Saturday morning. It was like 6 a.m. Why they're working on Saturday, I'm not sure, but whatever it was. And I remember getting this call, and he's like, Mike, we got to mobilize. We got to get everybody out here. And we're the lawyers. It's not like we can put it out. But, you know, that was shutting down the project. Time is money. That was making sure that we got in touch with the gas people, all these other things. So what's underground is very important, and the owner has to make sure the architect knows where, so they don't put a foundation there, so later the contractor doesn't dig and literally have flame shooting out 30 feet in the air. And then the surveys are going to talk about what type of soils that exist and everything else. If you have silty soil, or if you have clay, or if you have, it's going to hit bedrock, you want to make sure, so that, again, so the architect properly designs the foundations for that project. 5.5. The owner shall furnish the services of a geotech engineer, and that's the engineer that's going to be doing the borings. Now, some contracts change. Sometimes the owner doesn't want to take this responsibility, but this AIA, the basic contract, says, I, as the owner, am responsible for hiring the geotech company to go in and do those borings. So what they do is they drill down, they do core samples to find out what is underground, not necessarily where utilities are, but what's that soil made of? Again, is it silty, is it clay, is it bedrock, is it stone, whatever that might be, so you can design the foundations. One of my clients for about a dozen years was Navy Pier. So Navy Pier, they renovated the whole thing. I did all the renovations for all of Navy Pier that you see out there. I obviously didn't build them, but I did all the contracts for the architects and the contractors and for the Shakespeare Theater Company and the Wheel. I got to be on the, one of the first people to ride the Ferris wheel that they had up there. We actually had couple things. So it's been fun. But Lady Pier is sitting on a bunch of pilings out in the lake. And some of those pilings were literally over 100 years old. And so when we were putting together our contract with the architect, and then later our contract with the contractor, Lady Pier, because they were the owner, my client, they said, I don't want to be responsible for 5.5. Because I don't know what's out there, like the amount of cost and money and everything else and responsibility for me to take for this half a mile pier. Like, we don't want to do this. So we actually put this burden on the architect. We shifted it. And so the architect went and hired, maybe you paid for it, but the owner wanted to say, what I would rather not do is take 1,000 borings and I needed 2,000 because the architect needed something more. I'm not the designer. So this was a very complex project that needed a lot of understanding of what was going on there. And the owner, as an owner and not the designer, doesn't have that knowledge base. Now, it's not uncommon for an owner to work with the architect and say, what kind of soil samples do you want me to take and where do you want me to take them? But in this instance, we changed this provision to say, architect's responsible for it. We'll pay you, but if you need 1,000, do 1,000. If you need 50, do 50. Question?
Your example, why is that default rather than the owner? Because even if it's not complex, I feel like the architect should be charged more often.
It is a good question why it's the default. And the reason why is because, by and large, the architect, every entity that works on a construction project, and it has to do with the law about the land, the philosophy is it's your land, you're responsible for it. You bought it, so whatever mess you bring to me, wherever the utilities are located, whatever the soil is you bring to me, all that other stuff, it's your responsibility. So you need to take care of those things and tell me what that information is, like in 5.4 and 5.3 about the surveys and the utility locations and here the soil borings. You need to tell me that, and then I'm allowed to rely on that. As soon as the architect steps over the line and does this, then they're responsible. And that's what Navy Pier was saying, was like, hey, if you don't take enough, we'll pay you, but if you don't take enough borings, it's not our problem. And if a building falls down, it's your fault. Whereas if the owner does the borings and the building sinks or what have you, that's the owner's fault. And there's a give and take about it. So you want the architect to have some input and involvement, and a good owner will have that engagement. But most of the time, philosophically and legally, it's your property, you own it. You kind of have to deal with that. I'll give you another example where it happened the opposite way. So obviously in the Navy Pier case, they shifted all that responsibility away from them. So if things went wrong, and a few things did go wrong in the project, and Navy Pier was like, hey, I told you guys to do it. You need to take care of it. It's not our dime. We paid you for as much soil borings and soil and underground geotech sampling as you needed. If you needed more, that's not my problem. So that helped us in that sense. Another time I represented United Airlines, there was it wasn't in a terminal, it was out in, I don't know if it was Newark, it was one of the New York airports, but it was where they would store the planes to do work on it, you know, maintenance and everything else. It was brand new. Well, the owner, United, was responsible for doing the soil borings and provided them to the architect. And one area, it was a fair, obviously, with you had to put planes in. It was a huge building where you put in. And one area of the hangar or maintenance, whatever it was called, it started sinking. And that's because the soils weren't good in one area. We had provided, or United had provided, the soil samples and soil borings and had conferred with the architect on them and said this is what they were. And the fight ended up being, should it be United's responsibility or should it have been the architect's responsibility and over this clause and who did enough things? And there was ultimately a resolution, but it was called differential settlement. So some of the areas were fine and some were sinking, and that caused the columns to shift and move, and so then there was cracking and everything else. They were able to resolve it, but one of the disputes was over that very question. You gave me the samples, owner, so it's your responsibility. And then the owner's like, because there was more than just a simple provision here, was, yes, but we talked to you about this, and you made recommendations, and there was even questions that had to do with the samples we gave you told you the condition, your solution, because you knew the condition, was part of the fault. Like, nothing in construction litigation is ever easy. You know, they said, you didn't give us enough samples. We said, but where we gave you samples, you didn't do your job. So that's why we ended up resolving it. Did you have a question?
Yeah, so I worked for a structural engineering firm. Mm-hmm. Sometimes instead of getting boring samples, they just, like, assume a condition, like, because it's in Chicago, because it's a small project.
Yes.
Like, what is happening with this clause and that?
So if there's no boring samples done and there's an assumption of the existing conditions, then the argument would be to the architect, you didn't ask me for more. So what happens is the architect does have an obligation to say, I need information. And if you haven't asked for the information, so if your structural engineer is figuring out what type of structures and they know what they're going to be doing, if they haven't asked for it, then... And even though it says shall furnish them, if it's not, you didn't furnish. So the owner doesn't give you the geotech samples, doesn't give you the borings. And the architect starts designing. If they don't raise their hand and say, I need these, and they take an assumption of the risk, then the argument would be the architect should have asked for it, even though it said you shall provide it, because you went ahead and started your design. Now, if there was a problem later on, you could come back and try to make the argument as the architect, you didn't give me what I needed, but then I'm going to turn around representing the owner and say, you didn't tell me you needed this. So there's some risk that you want to take. But to your point, this was a project in Chicago. So it's probably a site where they had already built on it. And the one thing about Chicago is after you get a certain point, everything in Chicago is bedrock. So you can, if depending on what size of the building, you can drive piles down and you know you'll hit bedrock. And everybody knows that. And so I don't know what type of the size of the building. But it's like, I can tell you this, over the 30 years that I've worked downtown, the amount of times I've heard ping, ping, because they are dropping, you may even see these, they have these casings, like especially the stuff that's going on in the river area, they'll put this giant casing, which is a big giant metal tube, and they'll sink it down, and then they'll put a crane over it, and the crane just drops this giant steel weight, and it goes down and it hits, and what it's doing is it's pounding the soil down, and pounding the soil down, and then the casing will drop further, and they'll pound it down, and they'll pound it down, until they hit bedrock so that weight doesn't go any further. That's how they drive a pile in Chicago, and everybody knows that, so you don't necessarily have to do soil borings when you're building, especially in the city area, because you know you're going to be doing those pile drivings to get down to bedrock. So that's a custom, a knowledge of custom and industry practice, and so they may not need to have those borings. Obviously, a place like Navy Pier, which was a 100-year-old facility, I mean, that's what we were doing, was all the renovation was for the centennial anniversary of Navy Pier. So the stuff they found underneath that was just scary, because they built the thing so long ago. So anyway, okay, 5.6 shall provide the supplemental services. So remember, I talked to you about in 4.1, there's this chart. And the chart will have all the different types of services like lead and landscaping and a whole bunch of stuff that could be supplemental. Then there's two more columns. One says owner responsibility, one says architect responsibility. So if it's checked in that it's an owner responsibility, 5.6 says, owner, you need to do that. So the contract here is just looping back 5.6 and 4.1. Just because we checked a box in 4.1 doesn't mean the owner connects the dots here, so we're connecting it to 5.6. So if the box is checked in that chart, you must provide those supplemental services. 5.7. If the owner identifies a sustainable objective in Article 1, remember that was 1.16? That was if you wanted to have a sustainable objective, and I said sometimes you have it, you use this document, the E204, then the owner has responsibilities in filling it out. There are certain parts of that form that the owner has to fill out. So again, what this contract is doing is in Article 1, it was all that initial information. What's all the project about? It talks about sustainability. Now we get to the owner responsibility provision of the contract and it says, yes, owner, you must fill out portions of this agreement, of this document. So just making sure everybody knows what their obligations are. 5.8, the owner shall coordinate the services of its own consultants with the services provided by the architect. So I think I gave the example last week. I'm building a hotel, and I want a restaurant, a splashy kind of, you know, top chef type restaurant on the first level. I hire the kitchen designer. You know, I hire Stephanie Izard and her team to design the kitchen to make it what we really want. That's going to be my consultant. So I, as the owner, must make sure that my consultants, I'm coordinating their services. The architect's not getting paid for it because the architect's not under contract with them. I, as the owner, is under contract with them, so I need to coordinate the services of the mine, and then I need to furnish copies of the scope of services and the contracts to the architect if the architect needs them. So if I have designs from Stephanie Eisert's team, or if I have designs from somebody else, I need to give those to the architect, because you're going to design that hotel, and on the first floor, you're just going to leave a big open box, and it's going to say NIC in that. NIC, if you ever see that on a drawing, means not in contract. And so the architect, and it could be on the architect's not in contract, or even the contractor not in contract. And it's going to say NIC, it's going to be this big open box. And that's where we plug in the designs for the Starchitect or the Star restaurant, and it's going to go in there. So you have to, as the owner, coordinate. Now, one thing that I do in this provision, again, it's not going to be tested, but what I do when I represent owners is I flip this. For the same reason why Navy Pier didn't want to be responsible for all those soil borings, I, as the owner, and I don't look at the owners being unsophisticated. Some of my owners are extremely sophisticated, done a lot of construction. But they're running their business. They are not architects on a regular basis. They're making toys, they're building cars, they're whatever they're doing. And so, do you want the owner to be responsible for making some of these decisions about how to coordinate? Sure, I'm going to be sitting down with my restaurateur and figuring out what those designs look like and pretty, but should I be the one responsible for where the outlets are going to go or how the HVAC is going to go? No. And should I even have the extra responsibility of making sure that my people are doing what the other side does? So I will say to the architect, when I draft a contract for an owner, I will say, architects shall coordinate the services and the drawings of my architect, my consultant, the owner's consultant. And it's a coordination responsibility. The coordination responsibility is to make sure that the plugs are going to meet where their electrical are. The plumbing is not going to overlap with their HVAC. So coordination in construction and architecture is more about where things line up. It's not to say that the architect's responsible for talking to my architect and how the design looks. It's how they mesh and interface together. And I would rather as an owner, this is what I, and it's not all of my contracts with owners. Sometimes, like I said, I have some very sophisticated owners. They don't want their architects, the people they've hired, to touch it at all. But I often say to the owner, you get more bang for the buck if you pay the architect to coordinate where all these connections are than you having to do it yourself. Because if it doesn't go right when your restaurateur goes in and puts their restaurant in, the architect doesn't have to pay for that change. The contractor doesn't have to pay for that change. And more likely than not, even your restaurateur designer doesn't have to pay for the change. It's you, because it's the owner that's coordinating the services. So you are the one that has to pay for that. And it's always more expensive to pay for a screw-up in construction than it is to pay for it to be fixed in the beginning. Now, as I've told you, I think one of my clients is Haribo, the candy maker. Their candy equipment and their machinery is highly secretive. In fact, as we built the factory, I went up to the factory many, many times during construction, and I have my two kids, one's a sophomore in high school and one's a seventh grader. This was a few years back, and I kept promising them I'd get them a tour of the factory. I'm like, come on, you guys get to see Candy Factory. And so I was talking to Martin, the project manager for Haribo, and I'm like, Martin, when can we get my kids in? And, you know, my wife wants to come up and see it. Only 45-minute drive from my house, and the factory was getting closer, and he's like, you have to be here by next week. And we had been talking about it for about a year and everything. I'm like, what do you mean? I said, you guys aren't even, you're like 8 months from operations. He's like, the equipment's coming in next week, Mike. And he's like, you're not allowed in. I, the lawyer who's represented them, was not allowed in. I have never seen the equipment in there that they make the candy with. I've been in the huge space, but it was before they went in. So all of the design services that related to the connections and all these equipment, and what they did when they built this stuff, all this equipment, obviously they have factories in Germany and they have other ones in Turkey and China and other places across the world, but most of the guts of their equipment is made with internally at Haribo and people they've worked with for years in Germany. Now they have some equipment that's here, but they have different people making different parts, so not one person, other than if you are a Haribo designer engineer, knows how those go together. And so everything was shipped in at different times, and they were loaded, and then they literally, the space of the Haribo factory is probably it's at least a football field wide, and it's maybe four football fields long, and they have, and there's three stories of them. And it's, and when we were, they filled in one floor. I don't know if they've got the second floor filled of the equipment. And so it's massive, and they shrouded it all off, like, so nobody could see it, because there was still construction going on in the other part of the building. So even the people that built the building couldn't see what was going on behind the curtain. That's where I made, at the very beginning of the doing the contracts, I suggested and coordinated, like, not a chance. We are not having anybody coordinate our stuff. We're going to do it. Sometimes problems come from that, but there are reasons why it goes one way or the other. So, and then the bottom part of here just talks about that everybody needs to maintain the proper insurance. You know, you're going to be asking your architect, your main architect and your main contractor to carry insurance. Of course, you have to do that with your other architect that you're bringing in or other consultants, because they need to protect everybody on the project site. So, 5.9, the owner shall furnish test inspections reports required by law of the contract documents. So as you go along, and it's probably easiest to kind of think about it when you're building a house, like after a certain period of time, once the framing's up, somebody's got to walk around from the building committee or the building commission from the local, you know, the local municipality, city or whatever, and make sure that the framing was good. And then you get certified for the framing. And then when the plumbing goes in, they come and inspect that. When the insulation goes in, they inspect that. The owner's responsible for all that, and they shall furnish that if there are tests, inspections, and reports. The contractor may make the call to the building department because they have the better relationship, but the owner still has to provide that information. 5.10, the owner shall furnish all legal insurance and accounting services. So if there are legal things that come up, of course, the owner is responsible for that. It's not up to the architect to pay for it. 5.11, the owner shall provide prompt written notice to the architect if the owner becomes aware of any fault or defect in the project, including errors, omissions, inconsistencies in the architect's instruments of service. Now,